welcome to the November 26, 2019 Asteroid Planning Commission meeting. We will call the meeting to order at 6:30 p.m. Special Projects Planner Rosemary Johnson, would you please do a roll call?
Sure. Commissioner Kevin Latek?
Here.
Sorry. Commissioner Cochran?
Here.
Commissioner Price?
Here.
Commissioner Womack?
Here.
Vice President Moore?
Here.
Commissioners, President Fitzpatrick and Commissioner Henry are excused. Staff present, City Manager Acting Community Development Director Brent Estes, Contract Planner Rosemary Johnson, and Planner Barbara Fryer.
Thank you very much. Are there any corrections to minutes?
Yes.
On page four, this is Commissioner Cameron Latek. On page four, it sounds like in the middle, they couldn't quite hear something that I said. I did say I would be fine with moving this boundary to include a building.
Any other corrections? Could I have a motion?
I move we approve the minutes of the October 22nd, 2019 Asteroid Planning Commission meeting as amended.
Second.
We have a motion and second on the floor. A motion by Commissioner Price, seconded by Commissioner Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The Asteroid Planning Commission will handle one amendment request tonight with a public hearing. The order I will follow is outlined in a handout called Procedures for Conduct of Public Hearings, which is available from staff. Scheduled public hearings are itemized on the agenda. In each case, I will identify the subject, announce when the public hearing is open, and ask anyone interested to testify regarding the matter. If you wish to speak, please be sure to sign in on the hearing sign-in sheet located on the side table. You should address your remarks to whether or not the application in question meets the necessary criteria. The significant criteria that apply to each issue are listed in the staff report, which staff has available. If you fail to raise an issue in person or by letter, the Asteroid Planning Commission or City Council, an appeal of that issue would not be permitted. Our first public hearing tonight is continued from the October 22nd, 2019 Asteroid Planning Commission meeting. Amendment request A18-01 by Community Development Director to amend the development code sections concerning the urban core overlay zone of the riverfront overlay area requirements. The amendment would add an overlay zone for the urban core area, generally from the 2nd to 16th Streets pierhead line to Commercial Street. It includes separate codes for overwater areas and online areas concerning allowable uses, standards for location, height, building mass, and scale, gross floor area, design review standards and guidelines, public access, lighting signs, and landscaping. The request would also rezone approximately 1.5 acres from C2 to C3, 0.64 acres from C3 to C4, 1.17 acres from S2A to C3, 0.02 acres S2A to MH, and 11.11 acres from S2A to C4 zones. Could we have a presentation of the amended staff report, please?
Sure. Well, before I get started on that, I thought you might enjoy this little tidbit of information. The Morning Astorian, we found an article from 1900, right after the turn of the century, that citizens were asking for street ends to be opened for swimming pools. And they had it designed, and what they were requesting was that there'd be a ramp at the right of way going down into the Columbia River with an enclosure that would allow the water to come in and out, but you couldn't get floating out into the river. And as tides would change, the amount of water in that area would change. So I thought it's interesting that since the turn of the century, we have been discussing street ends and public access.
Would that be a permissible water-dependent use in today's?
Water for recreation. So, I thought you'd enjoy that.
That's great.
Okay, as a reminder, we had the meeting last month and the public hearing remained open because multiple issues were changed that were dramatic from what people had heard the month before. And so between the two meetings, staff did reach out with a press release to neighborhoods, to the press, and to anyone who had expressed interest during this entire Urban Core process with the press release, letting them know that there were additional changes so that they had an opportunity to come tonight and comment on. So we did do that. Reminder, Vice President Moore identified the area. This just shows you the Urban Core area. The over water limitation and non-limitation areas, we had one revision, which was at the foot of 9th Street, and that was made on the map. And so now there are a greater area at 9th Street that is non-limitation, and that's where the old ice house was, or that's going to be used by a Drift Hotel. I'll comment right now, you did have a letter from Nick Hague, George Hague, and he was stating that there was a 10 blocks of continuous non-limitation areas. And I wanted to note here that while we have this slide, that there's only the greatest length is 3.5 blocks. So there are no 10 blocks. There's a 3.5 blocks there at 9th area, and then down here around 14th, it's 2.5 blocks. So at no time are there 10 blocks of non-limitation areas. Prohibited uses in the aquatic zone. What you had requested was that we amend the code, or amend the draft, so that there were more allowable uses in the on overwater areas. And one of the uses that you were want to change was hotels and motels. Hotels and motels are prohibited except in buildings existing prior to January 1, 2020. So what we came out of that last meeting and I understood was that you didn't want a new building built over the water for hotels, but any building that was there prior to January 1 of 2020 could be used and converted to a hotel. The other issue was professional and medical offices. Originally we were having those prohibited except in existing buildings, and you saw no reason for that, so professional and medical offices are now an allowable use. The other issue was fossil fuel and petroleum product terminals, and the question came up as to what do we mean, because there is a fueling station for boats at the end of 5th Street, and you did not want to prohibit that. The terminals, as was obvious to staff, but we want to make it clear in the report, a terminal is larger. So what I did was we're adding the definition of what a terminal is, so that it is that bulk transport and storage. It's not a fueling station for the boat. So we're adding that definition to make that clear. The other issue was that we went on to on over the water, the issue of could a building not comply with the width that limitations. And some of the buildings cannot be wider than a certain amount, yet you have existing buildings that if they wanted to do infill for the existing buildings, that would not comply with the code width. So we're adding this graphic to show that if a building is existing, those dotted lines, it could fill in because the building's already there, it's already that width, it's just filling in some of those gaps. It's not going to change the impact to the waterfront that much. The other was the height on land, and what came out of the last meeting, that is within 100 feet of the river trail. So that's the shoreline area. No building can exceed 35 feet high. And after 100 feet, then it could go up to 45 feet, which is the typical maximum height in the C4 downtown zone. So it's not higher than what's allowed now. Also, that no variances to building height would be allowed. Now, a variance is for the building itself. However, there are exceptions that are in the code that are still allowed for mechanical equipment. Mechanical equipment, we did amend that at some of the previous meetings through the Bridge Vista and waterfront rezoning. And we clarified that it can only be mechanical equipment needed for the building, such as elevator shafts, not extra storage rooms or anything else. So just the minimum needed for the mechanical equipment. This just shows some of the areas being rezoned. Basically, it's going to be closer to your downtown zoning. We're getting rid of the tourist-oriented zoning and the shoreland tourist-oriented. And then the next meeting for the city council is tentatively proposed for January 6th. We do have two pieces of correspondence. And the one of them is from, you have it in a memo there in front of you, from a Dick Darby. And then the other one, I will review a couple of the questions because Mr. Haig has raised several questions that I want to at least respond to for you. He questions employee parking for the code. And we did amend the code recently to clarify that the off-street parking requirements in the code have already taken into consideration that those are for employees and for visitors or guests to that facility. So it is included in the code that we have addressed the employee issue. His concern with the amount of open space and the views blocked along the river trail, a reminder that the river trail is 50 feet wide, not just the path, and you have a 10-foot required setback on the south and a 20-foot setback on the north, so the view corridor along the river trail will be theoretically 80 feet wide for any new construction. Of course, you do have areas that are narrow with existing structures. Not answering all. The 35-foot height, he questions the fact that the roof-mounted equipment, and as I noted, there are some limitations, but those are exempt. The issue with endangered species and shading of the Columbia River, when you set up the uses that are allowed, you're not reviewing the impacts to the estuary at that time. Anytime a new structure or alteration is coming into the city, they have to go through a review for the impact to the estuary. And there are specific studies that they have to do and permits that are required. So any new construction would be reviewed at the time of construction. Not based on the use, but based on the exact location where they are and what they are doing in the river that would impact the estuary. So that's done at the time of a permit. The question about the Cascadia subduction zone, we are in the process right now of updating our multi-jurisdictional natural hazard mitigation plan. So that is a countywide plan, and we are working with the county and the Department of Land Conservation and Development to update that. It addresses all the natural hazards and what impacts and what things you want to do in your city to help mitigate those potential impacts. Restroom issues are not part of this code amendment, and the city is currently looking at issues with restrooms, but that's not part of the amendment process. He has a question here, which one question that you might want to discuss a little bit more. You have an exception that a water-dependent use is allowed to go 35 feet high without any special permits or anything for a water-dependent use. His question is, what happens if someone comes in for a water-dependent use the next week, they turn it into a different use, and you now have a 35-foot height? Is there any limitation on how long it has to stay a water-dependent use, or whether you're going to do anything to the building once that is constructed? It's just a question that he has raised. He had questions to balconies and awnings, and we got rid of the step back, and we had prohibited balconies and awnings in the step back area. On the north, south, along the rights of way, the step back is a 70-foot wide corridor, and you can't have balconies and awnings in that area. On the north, along the river trail, you cannot encroach with a balcony, an awning, because it's part of the structure. An awning could possibly encroach into that setback area, and it's a 10-foot setback along that river trail in the south and 20-foot along the north. So you could theoretically have those be encroaching into that 80-foot corridor. And the other comment was about the wastewater treatment facility. And the last time I spoke with the engineering department, there was not a concern with its capacity at this time, as he has indicated here. And we do not have any special fees at this time. It is a larger issue for the city as a whole, but again, it cannot be addressed in these amendments that we're working on right now. But as far as I'm aware, there are no issues with the capacity of our facility at this point. With that, I won't go through the staff report. I made the updates. We went through that the last time, and anything that is was updated with these new codes, I went in and addressed all of those. There is a chart on page 34 of your staff report that does show some of the uses that are wasn't changing from the S2A and the C2 when you get to your C3 and C4 zones. So for the most part, it is opening up more uses in that area, because the C2 and the S2A were more restrictive than the C3 and the C4. A few of the uses that are proposed to be prohibited, I have highlighted there. So those are the only uses that are coming back from what was allowed before. So for the most part, it is expanding the uses. Have you got any questions?
Do commissioners have any questions for staff?
I guess I do have a question, Planner Johnson, about the question about changing a use after getting it to be permitted. Is there not a procedure to, or a requirement to stick with the use?
The way the code is drafted right now, there's nothing. In some codes, like when we were talking about having housing as an exception to the height, that draft had in it that it had to be for low-income housing, and we put in there for a period of 25 years. But that was with a major investment for low-income housing, so that didn't get turned around and high income after a year. With a water-dependent use, who knows how long that use will be there? No one can predict when a use is no longer viable at a site.
But it would need to remain water dependent in any case at that height. So if it changed to something non-water dependent, does that mean it has to come down to a certain height or go away? Or?
At this point, it would not have to be changed. And that's where I think his question came in, is what would stop someone from coming in, getting that height for water dependent use, a month later, getting that use out and putting another use in. At this point, that could occur. Because there's no restriction. So So if it was for a water-dependent use, you could consider whether you want to say that it has to remain for minimum, or that it has to be.
Right, or else.
Okay, a variance.
Or else if there's not another use that is, I mean, maybe there are other appropriate uses that.
I'm having some trouble conceiving kind of what we'd be talking about. That would be one thing and then another. I mean, theoretically, I can see an argument, but I'm not imagining any real cases.
And, you know, I don't foresee it as a major issue, but it was a question that I wanted to make sure that you understood the question. Because for the most part, there are very few water-dependent uses along the waterfront. And if they're going to that much expense for a water-dependent use, you know, 35 feet is still not that high over the water. I can't remember. I think we allow that with a variance. And so whether or not you can say that if a water-dependent use changed, they'd have to get a variance, but that would be just a paperwork exercise and not really, I would say, not recommended. Because if you're going to say they have to tear down part of the building, that's a major change. But the height, let's see here. They're allowed up to 35 feet in certain areas, but the water dependent can get that 35 feet without those other restrictions. So it's not adding a major height to the waterfront, it's just allowing them to do it without an exception, whereas the others have to comply with a few exceptions.
But it doesn't seem like a strategic incentive for nefarious developments. It doesn't seem like you're getting a nose under the tent type thing. So I'm okay with that. Thank you.
Any more questions? Commander Johnson, did you have a question?
Well, just on the same issue, but maybe we should talk about it after the public hearing, or after the public's had an opportunity to speak.
Planner Johnson, do you foresee any issues with our recommended code changes should the city want to construct new bathrooms along the Riverwalk?
The restrooms would have to meet setbacks, and we're only talking 20 feet from the River Trail properties, or 10 feet on the south. So I don't think it's going to impact any of the potential locations. I mean, 10 feet, you can move it back that far.
If it would trigger the requirement to go before design review committee.
Oh, yeah, and that would be automatic, but.
Yeah, I mean, so there's, but at least, you know, there's some areas that would trigger Historic Landmarks Commission already. So there may be some additional process that could be needed. I mean, there has, you know, at the city council meeting that Ms. Johnson kind of alluded to, there were representatives from the Downtown Association, from the chamber there, who were discussing some conversations we'd had with the Parks Department looking at possible restroom facilities, those being the two places where there are porta potties present, and that's the 9th Street Park at 9th and Astor, and then the future Nordic Park site. And I don't know the site.
Are those both south of the Riverwalk?
They are.
Okay.
And both would meet the setback requirements probably. And as Mr. Essie said, it just has to go through design review.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, we will call anyone from the audience who wishes to make some public comment. Hearing has continued open from our last meeting, so are there any presentations by persons in favor of the application? Is there a presentation by persons who would speak impartial to the application? Is there a presentation by persons who would speak against the application?
Kind of a little of everything.
Come on up.
For the record, I'm Steve Fick, PO Box 715 Astoria. I'm really not well prepared tonight. I had a fire about 2.5 weeks ago, and I've been messed up with that, but I'm gonna just kind of bring up some general concerns here and comments. Rosemary brought up a point. What if you build it for this and then somebody buys it and does something else with it? You gotta be thinking too, at the same time, you might have a synergy there that you're gonna have multi-uses in that, a seafood processing plant that might be utilized for retail or a loft for artists or, you know, or living quarters, whatever. So, specific to 4th Street, I want to see the height restriction maintained at 45 feet along the riverfront there, because you're not giving up, really, in my opinion, any quality viewing for the people walking along the waterfront, because you've got those great big condos to one side, and you know, if you're 35 feet or 45 feet, it's really not going to make a difference. Because there's one little core view and where the brick warehouse is, it looks straight out, and it's going to be the same regardless. And so I don't see any benefit. There may be some areas like this that if you go 45 feet, it'll lessen the burden on some of the other properties that you would find necessary to protect. So it's kind of if you go down there, look, and you'll see what I'm talking about, I hope. You've gone a real narrow corridor there now anyway. I'm confused. I know I'm supposed to just testify, but I'd like to appreciate an answer. It sounds like you can build, here again, the hotel thing, but we'll use the hotel specifically, in existing buildings, but I couldn't. I mean, I don't have any buildings right now at a big dock, but you couldn't put anything else. You couldn't add on to the existing buildings or be next to it, or.
All right, Jonathan, do you mind bringing up that?
The hotel motel is to be allowed in existing buildings, but that does not prohibit that building from expanding. It could expand. And in the situation such as the infill, that would be allowed, and that would all still be an existing building, but just expanded. So that whole area that is outlined could be hotel.
Okay.
Under the proposal.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to be creative here. Maybe it would be a better design too, is if you have the flexibility. Maybe we want to move something closer to the shore. I don't know at this point, but closer to the shoreline, leave some of that open in there. I don't want to take it where we take away the ability to be creative as a community on this. Not, like I said, I really don't have any desire to build a hotel right now, or in the future probably, but just if we lock ourselves up, or can only be here. I mean, I guess I could technically go buy a doghouse and then tack a stick from the boiler room there inshore here, and then I just, that's not what we want to do. We don't want to have technicalities that allow or disallow uses. So I don't know how we address that, but I think it should be addressed a little bit on that part. The other thing too, in C3, on 4th Street again, I can only speak for myself, but the C3 use does not allow seafood receiving or processing. And that's kind of one, I always viewed the property I have as one property. And, you know, I got a brick warehouse there, and I want to have multiple uses in it. I'm developing it. But we may want to put a room in there that puts stuffed peppers and salmon for meals, and I can't do it, you know, under this, I don't think, can I?
Okay, at this point, the building you're talking about is in the C2 zone, which does not allow seafood processing or receiving.
Oh, now you tell me.
See, now, not traditional. chalk fisheries, but the.
No, the brick building, yeah.
Right, that's in the C2 right now, which does not allow that use. We're proposing to send it to, which is a tourist oriented, we're proposing to rezone it to C3, which opens up a lot more uses, but the C3 is also downtown, it's up on the hill. Your C3 is your general commercial and allows a lot of different uses.
I don't see where there's a check here for C, for that use.
Right, seafood receiving and processing is not allowed in the C3 zone, because it generally is not your waterfront properties. You could consider allowing seafood receiving or processing in the C3 if it were within so many feet of the shoreline or something like that. So that it would be, it would only be allowed in certain C3 areas and not the C3 all the way around.
Justin, isn't the C3 zone light manufacturing with a retail component is permitted, correct?
Right, you are allowed light manufacturing, so manufacturing is different than seafood receiving and processing. Because seafood processing is generally not light manufacturing, but you could do light manufacturing.
Well, I want clarity on it, because, or if I put freezer space in or something, you know, can I put, you know, freezer holding space in that brick warehouse I'm part of, if I want, I mean.
May I continue with the answer? Warehousing is one of the allowable uses in the C3, and so it wouldn't have to be related to, necessarily to seafood. You could have warehousing of, like a freezer in that building. So the C3, wholesale trade or warehouse establishment would be a conditional use in that zone.
Yeah, okay, because if we talk manufacturing, and then we start talking about a cold storage is different, sometimes interpreted differently, or, you know, I want to do mushrooms in there, I can do mushrooms, but I can't do crawdads, you know, or whatever, and I just want to be sure, particularly on that property, it all ties together anyway, it's all kind of need to be together whether you have that opportunity, so what I'm.
The wholesale trade may not be allowed there, I need to double check that real quick.
It's conditional.
But it also says prohibited use, so in the.
Because there's the zone, and then there's in this case the overlay.
Overlay.
But there are certain other provisions that apply.
Okay. Warehousing associated with an allowable use, where allowable use was existing prior to January 1, and is located within 300 feet of the primary use. So if you want to do cold storage, warehousing in your brick building for fish hawk fisheries, that is within 300 feet, the buildings are existing, so yes, you could do it. If you want to warehouse somewhere else and it's, you know, 10 blocks away, no, you could not.
Okay, so if I may just clarify some more. So some of you don't put in a distillery in there. And there's a room there, that's a food grade room, and if I was distilling at a certain time of the year, could I shake crab in there? Or could I put canning equipment in there and can tuna in a micro cannery? So, I look for all the ways to stay alive here, and I, you know, and sincerely, that's what I'm trying to do, is just, you know, sometimes you have to throw stuff against the wall and see it sticks and works. So I guess I'd like to have clear understanding there.
Okay, generally that would be seafood processing, but depending on the intensity of the use and how it's associated with other uses, such as with public use of retail or something else, you might be able to get it through as light manufacturing. We might be able to approve it there, depending on the intensity of the use and what's happening.
See, that's the key word that's concerning, is might be able to get through, and I would like to.
Well, we'd have to look at what the proposal is.
Yeah, so, well, I know, but we come and go every 4 years, so, you know, so, I'd like to have a little more flexibility with that. I really don't see why you can't just allow seafood processing on that part. I mean, I just don't see where. Quite complicated.
Do you have any further comment?
No, just As I say, I'm not as prepared as I'd like to be tonight because of circumstances, but I think, other than that, I think there's a lot of flexibility in this, and a lot of good.
Great, thank you, Mr. Fay. Another presentation by those who would speak against the application?
I'm not against.
Okay.
I'm Chris Aitker, 68712. I'm impartial, but I have a question because, Jesus. I'm just curious about the no balcony rule on existing and new buildings along the river trail there. And is that in there? Did I hear that comment?
Can I respond?
Please respond, Mayor Johnson.
Okay. At this time, we got rid of the step backs. Step backs were where the building, after the first 15 feet, it had to step back 10 feet before it could go up.
Perfect.
And we prohibited balconies and awnings in that step back area.
Okay.
A balcony is part of the structure, so it would not be allowed in the step back, the 10 foot setback on the south. You could not do a balcony, but awnings generally do encroach into setback areas.
So are you talking about the
but there is no exclusion of balconies, that as long as the balconies met the setback requirements, one could install balconies along the river.
Okay, so on existing buildings that don't necessarily meet the setback requirements, you can't put a balcony in. And can you define...
Well, without a variance.
Without a variance. So you can put a balcony in with a variance.
If you can get a variance, but right now the code says you have to set back 10 feet from the river trail on the south. If someone has a building and they have enough land and want to encroach in that 20 feet with a balcony, they could apply for a variance. There's no guarantees of approval. They would have to show that they can meet the variance criteria.
So it's a little guardrail in front of a couple of French doors. Is that considered a balcony?
At ground level?
No. Well, you wouldn't have a railing at ground level, would you?
Yes, you could. Many places do because of privacy or water. Oh, it's near the water. But if you're doing it above the ground, then that's a balcony.
Okay. Even just a couple of bars.
Well, if the bars were flush with the building face,
okay,
then that's fine.
Well, building face, anything, the building or any flat, like landing or bars, have to meet the setback or get a variance.
Thanks.
Any further public comments? Are there any closing remarks from staff?
Just whether or not you want to do anything about seafood processing in the C3, and whether, if you do, whether you want that limited to within so many feet, abutting the waterfront or any of that. Other than that, I think most of the issues have been addressed.
I'd like to revisit that conversation about the seafood shipping and receiving in the C3 and some prescribed areas. Question to staff as far as over water, would that, as far as a designation, is that a good prescription?
No, over water is the aquatic zone. So it can be done over water. What the question is C3, which is land area.
Thank you.
And so on land in the C3, which is also elsewhere in the city.
Got it.
How much do you want to allow seafood processing on that land area?
I'm trying to think of what would be the downside of prohibiting it if it's north of the river trail, on land that's north of the river trail.
There are only a couple of places where you have C3 north of the river trail, and so you're not talking about very many properties.
Right.
So you could say something like that.
I think that would work for me.
How does the commission feel? Is Commissioner Womack on board with that?
I'm on board with north of the river trail.
North of the river trail is fine with me.
Okay, I'm okay with that. Let's move on that. Any other questions for staff?
If we could revisit the, let's see, what was it we wanted to revisit now? Maybe it's been visited enough.
Which are we wanting to revisit the comment about repurposing?
Yes, and having a time limit on water-dependent buildings that are able to, over water, that are able to get the 35-foot height. Well, two things about it. First of all, yes, I am in favor of putting some sort of time restriction on that so that it is not, doesn't become too simple. And the other question is, on page six, the number four on page six, I don't understand that. Water-dependent uses over water may construct water-dependent slash water-related needed facilities up to 35 feet in height without a variance. Are we talking here about there is already a water-dependent use in effect and they're looking to add something on? And
it could be either. It could be a new structure or this could be an existing that wants to add. If anyone else, if it's not water-dependent, water-related, then it has to meet numbers 1, 2, and 3 above.
Mm-hmm.
If it's water-dependent, then it's allowed the 35 feet, but does not have to comply with 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
So that's where the difference is. It's really, the change of use is just going to get into the width of the buildings, the percentage of the parcel, the view corridor. So, if it is water dependent, either new construction or addition, they can go up to 35 feet and not comply with 1, 2, and 3 above.
Okay. And for number three on the minimum 40-foot wide unobstructed view corridor, I probably have this mixed up with other conversations, but I thought it was 60 feet.
That was what was being proposed in Bridge Vista. And this all along has been a 40-foot wide separation for over water structures. Bridge Vista, we were looking at a 60, but that was a whole different issue.
Okay. I have some other questions, but I'll wait. That sort of takes care. Oh, well, so let's just talk about this time limit, perhaps, on the 35 feet. Is anybody else interested in putting a time limit?
I'm not real worried that it's going to happen, but I wouldn't object to a short time limit, like 2 years or something.
5 maybe?
And this would be between which time?
Specifically? From when a use is declared, I would imagine declared active.
Certificate of occupancy. Yeah.
Certificate of occupancy. Until it could be used for something else.
That could potentially end up being a development, go out of business, sit vacant for 3 or 4 years until the time limit hits, and then somebody
right.
can repurpose the building though. So what is the economic advantage to doing that from actually putting that in the code?
Right, which is why I would want a window, but a short window. In the event that it actually happened, we wouldn't want to have vacancies sitting around for a long time, but long enough to make it economically burdensome for someone to try to swindle an extra story.
It also shows the intent.
Well, the height isn't the largest restriction. It's the width of the building is what they're getting from this particular use. Am I not?
On the third, on the final story, on the top floor.
They're getting
well,
an
right.
extra 7 feet height and some width as well.
I mean, the width. I think the width is the larger advantage.
So would you like a time limit, Mr. Womack?
What does the rest of the commission think on this?
Would you like a time limit? A time limit, Commissioner Price?
May I ask another question? A certificate of occupancy Somebody comes in and they have a water-dependent use, they're building it, they got the permits, et cetera, and then they get the occupancy permit. Is that looked at to see that it is, in fact, a water-dependent use? It's not just good electrical and blah, blah.
No, we do look at the uses that are being approved, and so anytime you're doing something to a building, we're checking to make sure it's an allowable use. So if someone came in, and got the approval to do the 35 feet, they're not going to comply with 1, 2, and 3, which is the width and the view corridor. They would get, if we would verify that it's a water-dependent use, they would get their building permit, we'd inspect it, they'd get their certificate of occupancy, and if something goes wrong, 6 months, then, as you said, you could end up with a vacant building for a long time that couldn't be used. So
if a seafood processing facility is built, and then it goes out of business or whatever, and they want to turn it into a hotel, what's the process for that? Do they have to go through design review, planning commission?
Okay, well, the hotel's the wrong example because hotels are not allowed in any building built after January 1, 2020. So if it's an existing building and expanded, yes, the hotel could go in. So let's say it was existing and they expanded it.
They wanted to turn it into a medical building, right?
Whatever. Okay. They could do that at any time after the certificate of appropriateness or certificate of occupancy. They would come back in for a change of use and would have to go through building permits at that time. But because the building's existing as of that date, these other codes would not apply. And remember, this is only the difference between the 28 feet and up to 35. 28 feet, you still have to comply with everything. It's just, if you want to go that 35, you have these extra view corridors, unless you're water dependent.
Right.
So it's still, you know, it's how much do you want a building to potentially stay vacant versus an allowable reuse versus making sure that no one's circumventing the code.
Honestly, I think it's very improbable. I'm not worried about it.
So I retract my request because I think that it's better to let people at least pretend that they're going to do something, and then if they don't do what they said they were going to do, meet the wrath of the public. Fair enough.
Small staff question that might be housekeeping on page 3. The reference to allow for a mix of commercial, residential, water-dependent uses that supports those, but does not compete with the downtown core. Was that a phrase that we deleted?
On page where?
Yes.
It's in the
Riverfront
Vision Plan.
It is in the Riverfront. Okay, so that's referring to that. Okay, I take that. Thank you very much. I don't have any more questions.
Anyone else before I... At this time, I'm going to close the public hearing. And now we will have commissioner deliberation. Any comments or thoughts among us? Are we ready to make a motion on it?
Do we have the language about north of the Riverwalk for C3?
I'm getting that in there right now. And question, do you want seafood processing in the C3 north of the river trail, conditional use or outright use?
What is it above? It's permitted.
In the aquatic zone, it's outright.
Right, so to provide some context, it's already permitted outright over water, and I think what Ms. Johnson's asking is, do you want that to be continuing all the way to the river trail, as permitted.
That would seem the most logical.
Yes.
I'm fine with
that. A lot of positive head nods up here.
Yes.
Commissioner Womack, do you have any additional thoughts?
I do not.
Commissioner Price?
I do. some are for staff as well. Just, I think they might be typos. On page 9 of the ordinance, the end of the second sentence says, major renovations to structures constructed after the year 2013. Why that year?
Okay, when we started with the Riverfront Vision Plan and doing the code amendments, we decided that year was 2013, and these new additions for these piers over the water were to catch buildings after the Riverfront Vision Plan went into effect. And so that 2013 is carrying along throughout the entire waterfront area so that each zone doesn't have something different. The 2013 is the start of the Riverfront Vision Plan implementation, and so any building constructed prior to that date does not have to do those piers.
Okay, thank you. On page 13, A7, permitted uses in commercial zones, and number 7 is transportation service establishment. But on the next page, uses prohibited for on-land development, commercial zones number 11 is transportation service establishment. What am I missing?
So permitted in commercial zones, uses, commercial zones prohibited. Yeah, that looks like that could be a typo.
Yeah.
I will go back and see what it was supposed to have been in earlier meetings and correct that.
Okay. On page 18, number 1, public use existing prior to January 1, 2019. Should that now also be changed to 2020?
No, that can remain 2019 because we are looking at just one building there, and that's fine.
I found another, Mr. Haig mentioned this about the shoulds and all of that, and I found another place, I'll just give you this afterwards, I found a number of places where I think the should could be a shall.
That would be a major change. So that would be something we should discuss here.
Really?
Should and shall are different. Should is defined as a requirement unless you can show it's not feasible. Shall is mandatory, so that's a
right.
Big difference.
Okay, so on page, on page 21, all throughout 3, there's all lots of shoulds.
And that was intentional. That reflects what is done in all the other Riverfront Vision Plan areas, Bridge Vista, Civic Greenway, because these are design issues that are guidelines, they are not standards. A standard is something that you have to do. A guideline is trying to get you into a certain design.
There's a lot of room for mischief there.
It's intentionally that way.
I remember asking about that when we were talking about it, if that was language that had been causing problems for design review, and you said no, and that was enough.
Well, it's anytime you have a subjective decision, it's always problematic because each person has a different way of looking at it. The intent is to allow flexibility, and where you want it to definitely occur and you don't want that flexibility, we've put them as standards and had those as shalls. If the design feature has a little more flexibility and can change on the design of the building, that's where it's a guideline. This is what we would like to see, but you know, it's not a mandatory.
But I would say the should still is
required.
Is still required. It's saying it's required. However, you can make an argument to the decision-making board that there should be some flexibility.
Because that was my concern when we first started looking at this. We were just coming off of the design review committee having some real concerns about language that was making it hard for them to make enforceable decisions. And that was my understanding at the time. We talked about it. These shoulds were not the problem, and that this is language that they work with, that they're fine with.
Right, and
yeah.
This language here is what we came up to with as the fix to the Bridge Vista. And when we, it was a lot more wishy-washy
right.
than they all went. And so when we did the Bridge Vista, all the changes we made there to make it a little more clear, we implemented into this.
Mm-hmm.
So that it does reflect.
Yeah.
I would like to go back to even say the should and shall
mm-hmm.
goes back to when the gateway overlay was established for the Mill Pond area. So we have been working under the should and shall regimen going back until the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the clarification because it's not intuitive, I don't think,
mm-hmm.
but it's important to understand.
So I'll skip all of those other shoulds that I saw and go to lighting. I'm wondering, given that we don't require a lot of parking, and one of the things that we do hear about is the need for parking, also in certain areas, not so much in the downtown core area, the need for lighting, particularly along the Riverwalk. Since we won't have parking in some places, should we consider requiring some sort of lighting, pathway lighting or something, so that people who are walking from a place to their car have lighting, and rather than just leaving it up to the city to have to supply lighting all around the Riverwalk, which it has a problem financially.
Well, on the Riverwalk, there are places with city-maintained lighting along the river trail, but you're not going to have parking out there. Most of it's going to be on the landward side. Any parking area has to be lit, and if they're parking on the streets have street lights. So I'm not sure where you would be requiring the lighting.
Well, I think it's maybe the commissioner's prices is saying that if there is development that happens along the Riverwalk, it becomes like a half street improvement on a public right of way, and there's lighting and stuff that has to be, could there be some part? The problem is that we don't have an approved lighting standard for the Riverwalk. Our Public Works Department has just installed a pilot project on the 10th to 11th Street section. There's some new lights that went in and we're testing those, but it has never been adopted
Can you recall, I just thought about this later today, I didn't have a chance to think about it, but can you recall what the lighting is like around, 4th, 5th Street around there?
Around that area, 4th and 5th, actually there were some lights that were just installed, but they were more kind of just street lights.
Right.
That were.
So the Riverwalk isn't particularly well lit around there.
No, I mean it's.
I'm thinking if Mr. Fick wants to change his seafood processing, wants to change Fishhawk into a hotel, which he could. Should he be asked to provide some lighting there along the Riverwalk? Because people are going to have to be walking there to and from to get to their cars or to restaurants or whatever.
I'm going to say that I think to get to your.
Sorry to use you again.
No, but I think to get to your question, one of the things that came out of the Parks Master Plan was the desire to have more lighting along the Riverwalk. What we have not ever done is put into place a code that says if there is development along on land part of the Riverwalk, that any development triggers the need to install the bollard lights that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's along a trestle part, you need to install this other standard. I think that, I get your point there, where it becomes kind of triggered as a part of a development application, but I think we need to go and do some steps to adopt a lighting standard to be able to do that.
Okay.
And also,
you put that on your to-do list?
I mean, I think that that's a reasonable request. It's probably not that expensive, but I'm sure it is an expense, and it's one more thing that developers you know, don't want to have to do. But to for the city to continue to have the full burden of lighting through there is perhaps not reasonable.
Yeah, it would be something that you'd want to consider, because it probably is a little more spending than what you would think, because you're running electricity along the river trail, which is not on land that buried lines.
Right.
And I think there's really kind of a more global look that needs to happen, you know, between, I mean, this could apply to all four areas, or maybe we don't light up Alderbrook as much.
True.
But I think there's really kind of a bigger conversation about what sort of lighting standards we have. We've kept with the same bollard thing from when the first Riverwalk was installed in 1997. Mm-hmm. And when we expanded lighting in the Ashley West Urban Renewal District in around 2008, we purposely chose the same lighting because, first of all, those they're of Scandinavian design. Second of all, they have weather really well. From a maintenance standpoint, third of all, design-wise, you look at them now and they don't look like they're 20-some-odd years old. And so, but we've never adopted that as a standard. We just said, from a design aspect, we like this, it works, we're going to reuse it. So.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Price. Commissioner Cameron Lutter, what are your thoughts on this application?
I don't have anything more to add. I think that it incorporates pretty much what we talked about.
Great. Commissioner Corcoran?
I agree.
Would someone like to make a motion and remember to include the changes that we have requested? Can the motion just say with included amendments? Or do we need to be more specific?
I can line it out real quick once you make the motion.
Go ahead, anyone.
I move that the Astoria Planning Commission adopt the findings and conclusions contained in the November 18th, 2019 staff report. Amendment request A-1801 on Riverfront Vision Plan Implementation Ordinance for Urban Core Area as amended, and recommend that the Astoria City Council adopt the amendment request.
With the following changes to the draft, page 6 clarify that water dependent does not need to comply with 1, 2, and 3 above. On page 13, for uses allowed on land, allowable uses outright would now include seafood processing within the C3 zone north of the river trail. And on page 13 and 14, the transportation service establishment shows up both places, and staff will research which was it was supposed to be and correct that. And I believe those were the only changes.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Price and seconded by Commissioner Cameron Ladd. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. This is a recommendation, so I don't need to read the appeal, correct?
Correct.
No appeal.
No
appeal.
This concludes our public hearings. Do we have any reports from officers? Doesn't appear so. Do we have some status reports from staff? Or just reading status reports. Save the following dates. The December meeting for Astoria Planning Commission has been changed to an earlier date on Tuesday, December 10th. At 6:30 p.m. On Tuesday, January 28th, 2020 at 6:30 p.m. We will have our first meeting of the year, which includes the Traffic Safety and Astoria Planning Commission, on Thursday, January 30th, 2020 at 6:30 p.m. We'll have our annual commissioner training by Lisa Phipps of the State of Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development, and City Attorney Blair Hemingsgard will be there as well. Is there any non-agenda public comment?
Chair Moore.
Yes. Oh, did you have something to add?
Can I just add that you will be getting an invitation for the yearly City Council reception for all boards and commission members, and that's going to be held on Monday, December 16th at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers. But that invitation will be going out, but I just wanted to get that on your calendar.
Thank you. Is there any public comment for non-agenda items? The meeting will adjourn.